Hello and welcome to episode 2 of our podcast. We started our podcast to invite people in to talk about their lives and how they kind of interweave coffee into their day-to-day experiences. Now, with International Women's Day here to celebrate, we thought it'd be really nice to keep this one in-house. And we've invited Angharad, who's the owner of the business and also our head roaster, to chat about her coffee experiences and the experience of running an increasingly popular coffee roastery. So, hello, Angharad. Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome to your own business.
This is a weird treat, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, normally we ask people to pick one of our coffees to brew, or we brew them a coffee. But I thought today would be really interesting because you're the roaster. Why don't we get you to roast one of our coffees?
Yeah, definitely.
So how do you fancy going out into production, grabbing one of the new coffees, putting it through, and then we'll brew it afterwards?
Yeah, brilliant. I'm keen to do that.
Fantastic. Let's get going. So we've come down to the production area of the roastery, and Harrod's going to kindly roast a batch of coffee for us. Now, the roast has been charging for a little while now. Maybe you can quickly explain what we mean by charging the roaster.
Yes, so obviously the drum's really cold, especially this time of the year. So we need to make sure that 700 kilos of metal is properly warmed up before we introduce the beans in. Because what can happen then is that obviously the charge temperature, the energy that's in the drum can plummet a lot when you introduce those cold beans into there as well.
Brilliant. And I know we're very close to the charge temperature now. And I believe you want to drop the beans in. So we have an 18 kilogram batch about to drop into the roaster.
There they go.
So there's the 18 kilograms all dropping in en masse. Normally we would be batch roasting, but what we're doing here is we're roasting to create a profile. Maybe you could just have a quick chat around what the difference between roasting to create a profile is against batch roasting.
So obviously new coffee day today, so there's a lot of stuff that has to happen beforehand before I actually dump it in as I just have now. I've got to check the density of the green beans, the moisture content of the green beans, shipping and storage can affect badly those things. So I have to check that the beans come into us nice and fresh. I also use the density and the moisture to help me kind of predict how to roast the bean. So all of those has an impact on how it's going to react in the drum. It gives off different energies. So obviously when I put the beans in for the first time, I don't have a preferred profile line to follow. I've got to create my own line. I've got to create my own recipe. I've got to think about the temperatures. I've got to think about the time. I've got to think about the energy that I introduce. So my energy that I introduce is actually in terms of the gas, how much of the gas heat that I can introduce and apply to the drum. So when you're creating a profile for a new coffee, it literally is just that. You're starting from scratch, nothing to follow. And that's why, as I'm talking to you, I'm keeping a very keen eye on what's happening to my lines right now, because I want to predict what's going on every 30 seconds so I can then react accordingly. So obviously batch roasting is when all of this has been pre-done and I actually do have a profile line to follow. All the notes, all the energy increases, decreases, the Maillard reaction, which is something else that we record in there, all of that's all been in, it's all inputted, all that knowledge and information is available. Batch roasting is literally where you roast the coffee following that set recipe, if you like. So nice and, well, I say nice and easy, but it's not the easiest of jobs to do.
No, you're absolutely right. I could talk from bitter experience because I'm not allowed to roast coffee in this business. I am not the best coffee roaster in the world. And since day one, Angharad has driven our roasting forwards. She's the only person who does our profile roasting. And she shares the batch roasting with one other employee, Byron,
who does a lot of our batch roasting for us now. I just seen you go over to the roaster and check the screen. Can you kind of explain what you're looking for at the moment?
Yeah, so I am, like I said earlier, every 30 seconds there's a profile line that tells me what's happening in the bean. How much energy is the bean absorbing or giving off? What I don't want to happen is I don't want the energy inside the drum to run away with itself. That can result in beans that are baked, roasted too long, or not enough energy in the drum where it's taking too long to roast, if it's going too quickly, vice versa. So I'm just keeping a really keen eye on my prediction of how it should be going. And that's all it is on a first profile roast, is a calculated guess as to how you feel like it should go. So I'm just about to decrease the energy now at 150 degrees Celsius. And I've just decreased the temperature now from 90% gas burners on down to 60% of my gas burners on, which is a hard thing to judge by, granted, but it's quite a big leap down. So what's been happening at the beginning now is I've been effectively trying to dry and draw the moisture out of the bean. So we need plenty of heat in there to burn away the initial moisture that will come out of the bean.
I can also see the colour of the beans now. They went in green, but they're no longer green. Can you talk us through what's happened in terms of the colour change?
Yes, of course. So I've literally just reached the colour change right now, and that means the initial change from green, if you like, to the yellow, the early yellow stage. And that's when I know that most of the moisture, the initial moisture of the bean has escaped, and you can start to colour the beans from this point on. So there's a Maillard reaction now that we're calling it that's happening from this colour change. And as the colours change now, it's going to go from your yellows all the way through to like to your browns, basically.
And if I'm right in thinking, we're about 6 minutes into the roast?
We are, 6 minutes 33, but the colour change happened at 5 minutes. And then obviously there's a lot of gas decreasing that needs to happen now. I need to control that gas now to make sure that the roast doesn't run away with itself, because the beans are now creating a lot of their own energy from gases that are now starting to be released.
It's also interesting, on the screen you have got about 7 lines of data on the right hand side. What kind of information is coming out for you?
So the main one I look at is the bean temperature, and we've also got a drum temperature that I'm looking at. It tells you the exhaust, the airflow, the drum speed. So it tells me a lot of stuff, that these preset, some of them are preset measures that I've already put in. So I'm just about to probably hit first crack.
Now, while Langhara's concentrating there, first crack is where there's a build-up of pressure inside the bean. And throughout the roast so far, that pressure's been building up. And we get to a point where the beans aren't strong enough to hold back that pressure. And literally, it pops or cracks out of the beans. And it's a critical point in the roast. We are probably at the point from first crack onwards where we could drink the coffee. We want to develop the coffee from this point on. Now, it might not pick this up, but I'm kind of hoping that when first crack starts proper, we can get you closer to pick up that sound.
Yeah, it's really hard because you've got the noise of the roaster behind, but...
And what kind of colour are we looking at now?
We're looking at a light, mousy brown colour at the moment.
Twigs
popping in the background is...
Just of that twig popping sound, absolutely. You can just pick it out.
So, obviously those twigs popping is those gases coming out. And again, that's causing all kinds of energy releases, which I've got to keep keen eye on and control my gas input, my energy input. to make sure it doesn't fly off and speed off with itself. Otherwise, the roast will be too quick. It will reach too high a temperature as an end temperature.
Yeah, and I'm right in thinking that there's energy in the beans now. And if you don't control this at this point in time, then effectively you can ruin the roast.
Yes, yeah, you can. So I just want to stretch this first crack period out to make sure that we're developing the bean, caramelising all the natural flavours, sugars inside it. And obviously this is the point as well as the drying time at the beginning. This is the point where we're just trying to get the characters that we want out of it. So I'm about to put the airflow on now, which is going to be quite noisy, and the beans are going to drop out within 15 seconds. Beans coming out.
About how long was that roast?
10 minutes on the dot.
Brilliant, which surprises a lot of people. A lot of people think it's longer.
Yeah, some people think it's 24 hours. It's amazing how many people think it's 24 hours.
And of course, we could be starting the second batch off quite soon afterwards.
Yeah, you can. So it usually, with this noisy airflow going, it's drawing air downwards from the bean. So it's pulling the hot air down, which is cooling them quicker. There's another noise in the background, which is this arm that's turning through the beans, constantly turning them, making sure that the cooling process is as quick as it can be. So within about 2 minutes, the beans are going to be cool enough that I can then charge the drum back up again to the same temperature as I did last time if I was roasting this coffee again, and then I could go again.
Now, this was a kind of test profile batch to create the profile. What are you going to do from here in terms of this coffee?
Well, I'm going to make sure that we've got all the roasted data available. What I was saying earlier with the Maillard reaction, I want to know how long that Maillard reaction was happening. I want to know how long the drying time was, and I want to know how long the development time was from first crack to this point that we've just dropped them out. All of that will give us the information that we need on how to adjust the roast for the next time if need be. So obviously what we have to do is get some of this coffee now and cup it and taste it and see, did we get the portion of acidity right? Did we get the portion of sugars right? Was there enough three-dimensional flavor in the coffee? Does it taste just as good hot as it does cold? And then obviously the last thing as well is that we need to just measure how much weight that bean has lost when you roasted it. I put 18 kilos in, and you'll probably get something around 12 or 13 percent weight loss, quite a lot.
Brilliant, fantastic. Well, we'll let you get that coffee finished off, and then we'll have a chat in a minute. Thanks for taking us through that roasting, fantastic experience. And now we've got the coffee in here to brew, so that you get a choice now. How would you like me to brew your coffee this morning?
There's only one choice for me always, and that's definitely a V60 filter brew.
Fantastic. Well, I'll get that started. And while I do, perhaps you can explain what a V60 is for those who don't know that, and also why you've picked that.
Yeah, so V60 is, that we're brewing here today is made up of a ceramic cone with a paper filter inside and a holding vessel like a glass jug or something at the bottom that will hold the brewed coffee. And it's a filter style coffee, so it'll make a nice, clean, crisp, fresh cup of coffee for us. And that's why I like it, just the cleanliness of it, the cleanliness of the brew at the bottom. I'm not keen on a cafetiere because of the sort of muddiness that you can get at the bottom of your cup. I don't like the feeling of that grittiness in your teeth. So obviously a filter for me all the way. And again, obviously, it just allows you to just to taste everything about the coffee without it being too strong, without all the bits and pieces in it. And it's just, I really enjoy it.
Fantastic. I'm going to get this ground very quickly.
This is reminding me of Saturday Kitchen, you know, when they put the blender on and everybody has to stay silent.
And I'll start this brew now. And while I do, perhaps we can have a little bit of a chat around, well, this is the 10th year that we've been running our business. Yep. This coming kind of October, November time.
Yep.
I remember 10 years ago, the first coffee roaster arriving. Exciting times.
Yeah.
And it's really weird because we've been doing a little bit of roasting at home and kind of sharing that responsibility. But somehow I didn't end up roasting coffee in the business at all. And I'm not quite sure how that came about.
I know why. Oh, there's a particular day in mind, and it's the poignant moment for me, for sure, which obviously set the scene for the rest of our years roasting. And I've got to share the story. I had literally, we were in Embleton at the time, I'd literally nipped out for 5 minutes to nip to the bathroom or something of that nature. And when I got back, I'd asked Gareth to hold the fort in terms of the roasting. You know, can you watch this batch for me? It's in the middle of its stage, roasting stage. I'll be 5 minutes. And when I got back, there was a delivery driver ambling around at the door, not knowing what to do. There was a couple of customers that had wandered into the roastery, kind of just wandering around the place aimlessly. The tap was running, which had started to flood the sink and whatnot. And then obviously my roasted coffee was burning quite nicely whilst Gareth was spinning around the place. It was quite a comical moment. So after that, it was like, yeah, no, off the roaster.
Joe, I remember that. I can't multitask.
No.
No, not at all. No, I'll accept that. And I think I accepted that you need a particular mindset to be able to roast coffee. Yeah. And I definitely haven't got that mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things probably that just allowed the both of us to fall naturally into the roles that we do across the business, actually. There's been no written rule who does what. We didn't sit down and have a bit of schedule going, agreeing, you know, I'm better at this, you're better at that. And we just naturally fell into those roles, really, didn't we? And like I said, that day definitely just it flagged up for the both of us that the roasting needed to be to become mine. But equally, I've got that frame of mind as well. I can just stand there and completely concentrate on that one task that I'm doing. Because also at the end of the day, that is the business, that the coffee that comes out, the beans that come out, is Cavetti. We aren't anything else. We are other things by now, but especially at the beginning, that is us.
Yeah, I think that's one of the proudest things about the business. As owners, we've never relinquished the core product. We take and took full charge of that core product from day one. And over the years, yeah, eventually someone else has been able to roast for us. But that took a long time. We'll come to that in a minute. But I am, to this day, our coffee is controlled, and the quality of it is very much controlled by the two of us.
Mm.
And I think that's really cool.
Mm. Yeah, it is. It's something that, you know, I've learned over time as well. We've both learned the art of roasting. I think I've just physically done the roasting. So whenever there's a roast or a batch going through that I'm not sure about, you've always been there on my shoulder thrashing out ideas. And very obviously, after the coffee's roasted, you're always there, quality controlling and so on. So it's always been a two-man thing, if you like, but the physical act of roasting has just, yeah, always been my job, and I've never relinquished it until very recently. Sore subject.
Yeah, we'll come to that shortly. Just out of interest, that, you know, there are some coffees that I remember over the years, but are there any coffees that you've enjoyed roasting?
Enjoyed roasting is quite a hard one that to answer. I'm just racking my brains now, because if you think I can roast tens of batches in a day, I can roast multiple days a week, I roast every single week of the month, I roast every single month of the year, and now for nearly 10 years. So to say that there's a standout roast that I like to roast, I can't that's really hard to answer. But what I could answer is there are particular varietals that I don't like to roast. Pacamaras in particular, or elephant beans. They are massive, huge beans. They're considerably bigger than their other counterparts. And they're very, very difficult to roast. Very difficult. It needs a particular set of parameters that I'm still yet to nail completely. And just when I think that I found out what the niche of them is, then another different Pacamara will come through from a different country, and the rules don't apply again. They're so difficult. Yeah,
it's funny. I remember getting exactly that Pacamara from El Salvador, and struggling with it. I also vividly remember at one point in the early days, us wanting to roast batches of coffee for our espresso blend. Now, we don't just mix coffees for espresso blends. We roast them, or you roast them, I should say, to get the coffees to
the royal we
to be soluble or equally soluble. Mm. And that's something I've worked hard on over the years. And I distinctly remember one particular blend that the components just wouldn't gel. And it was in the early days where we were in our early days and in our infancy of understanding solubility. Now, I seem to remember doing batch after batch after batch. I think we both agreed from day one that if we didn't like a batch, we wouldn't sell it.
No way.
Wouldn't go out the door.
No.
And I know from my point of view, it was frustrating, but how must it feel from a roaster's point of view to go through that experience of it just not working?
Mm, it's hard. It is hard, that, because obviously I have a massive vested interest in that coffee going out, but it can be quite dejecting at times, especially like you were saying, you were coming up to sack after sack of that particular coffee that just, in the end, it became more of a goal to try and find the right profile for it, as opposed to, you know, you'd finished worrying about how much coffee you'd wasted at that point. But at the same time, your confidence level goes down and down and down every time you get it wrong. And then it feels like you're over trying, and there was something that we just missing, and we were in our infancy, and I have a plethora of things that I can fall back on now as well as experience, but it's quite dejecting, and you also feel like you're letting the business down because you can't do it. So it's quite a personally damaging thing when that happens. Yeah. Even though, you know, there's nobody pointing a finger at you unless you were to sell it in that horrible bad form. But yeah, it's quite tough, that, to deal with.
And let's face it, the coffees that we roasted weren't bad. They weren't bad coffees. You know, we didn't mess up completely, but they just didn't hit the high standards that we set for ourselves. You know, a lot of people would drink those coffees quite happily. And in fact, today, if we do test roast coffees, we have teamed up with the Calvert Trust, because there's nothing wrong with those coffees. We just have to put a test batch through, and we now give those coffees to all the volunteers at the Calvert Trust, so they get free coffee offers, which is a nice little thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I like doing that, because like you said, there's so many people have quizzed us before, what do you do with all this coffee? And you quite ashamedly actually say, well, actually it just goes in the bin. But at the same time, you're quite proud of that. But at the same time, you're thinking, yes, do you know what? Maybe someone can benefit from this. So it's quite nice that it goes out there, actually.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there we go. I've finished the brew. I feel a bit under pressure here because we roasted this coffee. I know how much you like your V60s. So this is this is from a farm called Eco Agricola in the Serra do Cabral region of Brazil. It's a tropical fermentation. Coffee, which means that it's kind of sat out in the sacks in dry weather, just fermenting slightly.
Under the trees, I believe.
Under the trees in sacks for about 24 hours before being kind of dried on patios. So, if I'm going to put you on the spot here now, I know that. We've only just quickly had a taste of this. And no, we haven't cupped it, and I accept that. But based upon these first initial sips of it. Oh, do you want milk and sugar, by the way?
No, thank you.
Okay. should always offer. Based on these first few sips, and it's a difficult thing to answer, but it'd be interesting to see, you know, if you had to change the profile, if you had to look at that roast again, would you do anything different? Would you try something different?
So Yeah, initial thoughts, because the coffee's quite hot still at the moment. I'll take some more sips in a bit when it's cooled down so I can get the more sugar, sweeter side of it. But initially, whilst it's in its hot form, I'm getting all the acidity, which there should be. So any fruit flavours will be apparent now. And I'm getting blueberries out of here, which I'd be quite keen to see how that then develops once it starts cooling down. So at the moment, I probably wouldn't change it. But if that blueberry doesn't then sweeten out to a more sugary sweetness, so what happens when the acidity wanes because it's cooling? I want to know what happens then. And if that blueberry doesn't become a bit of a blueberry muffin type of experience in your mouth when it starts cooling, then I would probably develop the bean a bit more. So from the point that we hit the first crack that we talked about earlier, then I would try and elongate the end bit just a little bit more to try and sweeten that coffee. And that would probably go hand in hand with just extending the Maillard process a bit longer.
Well, it tastes really good. It is fresh. I mean, we're drinking this. And for those who think straight out the roaster, brew straight away is the right way to go, there's a lot of gas. I can taste the gassiness in this.
Yeah.
It's a little bit too fresh for me. Mm. I'd like it to settle for a couple of days, but it's a really good coffee.
It is. And to be fair, tasting it tomorrow, I find doesn't always do the trick either, because it tends to dip in its flavour, in its yumminess, if you like, by the second day of roasting. It almost like it needs the third day onwards before it starts to develop properly.
But, I agree. It's something I keep wanting to look at, but, you know, time.
Absolutely.
Over the years, there's been certain things that we've had to address and consider. And sometimes because we are partners in the business and partners out of the business, it can be challenging sometimes to discuss certain things for fear of upsetting the other person.
Oh no, it's no challenge. We just discuss it and then you agree it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But there's one thing that over the years took a bit of a while to address, and that is a point in time where our roasting capacity became so great that for you to continue to roast was damaging in lots of ways. It was damaging for you personally, for the business, and we had to get to a point whereby we allowed somebody else to roast for us. And I know that the process of getting you to relinquish that roasting was prolonged. What do you remember of that?
Horrible memories, actually. Nightmares and blank expressions when somebody would try and talk to me about...
Yeah, I remember that.
How would you feel about somebody roasting for you? Super sore subject, because obviously... At the point that we had reached where we knew somebody would need to take on some batch roasting for me, I'd been doing it day in, day out, and I'd gone through the whole learning process of it for such an amount of years that you just think, well, A, it's my baby, and B, who in the world are you going to get to go and do that? How do you even start teaching someone to do what you do? And in the beginning, they were the two questions that were in my head, and they were pretty massive questions. Mm. And then I guess the more it was thrown at me that I couldn't keep carrying on roasting as I did, those bigger questions were then chunked up into smaller little answers, and then other smaller little questions that rose from them. And I think it was just breaking down those two big questions into smaller bits and chunks and then potentially starting from there. But that does not come back to the fact that that's my baby. And if I don't do that, then would I feel less important? I don't know. But these are just silly things that go through your head at the time.
It makes sense. It makes total sense. You know, it's a big part of the business. It was a big role you were playing in the business. It was your baby.
Yeah.
We always knew that. And I think both of us were really worried about relinquishing the roasting. Knew that we had to. Mm. Knew for the business that we had to. But like we mentioned before, when we were roasting, you still do the profile roasting.
Yeah.
So the actual decision how each bean should be roasted is yours.
Yeah.
other people do some of the batch roasting, and that's all they do is batch roast.
Well, you say other people.
Yes, okay.
To be fair, there it is only Byron that does it. Byron, obviously, to people who don't know, works for us. He's been working for us since 2017. And again, he's the only one who roasts for us. And I think it should be a privilege that he does. And I know he does feel it a privilege that I actually allow him to do it. But yeah, it is just him that now roasts.
And he does a great job.
He does.
Most of the coffee I've been drinking over the past couple of months, he's roasted. And he does a great job. But we have, I think at the moment, we have about 4 new coffees coming in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Mm. So the pressure's going to be back on you to nail those profiles.
Yeah, it is, because usually I can roast the coffee and tweak the profile. Usually it is more than just good enough after I've roasted it the first time, where it then just needs tweaks. So such as this coffee now, I am very happy with the recipe, if you like, the profile that I've set for it, but it just potentially just needs tweaked towards the end, just to exaggerate a little bit more of the sugar. I can normally put one batch in, create the profile, and then put the second batch in to do the tweaks that I need. And then by the third batch, I'll usually roast it again, just so I can get a feel on how the coffee reacts in the roaster, because putting one on doesn't give you the pattern of how it reacts. Lots of variables, temperature of the roast, was it the first coffee that I've put in the day or the 10th coffee that I put in? So lots and lots of things that can affect it.
And let's be fair to Byron, when we talk about batch roasting, it makes it sound like he's just following something. He is, but external environmental impacts mean that every single roast, he has to make decisions. It's not simply just a case of repetition. As the roaster gets hot, like you say, as the beans age, as the day gets warmer, the season gets warmer, he's having to make decisions about following your profile.
Yeah.
Every single batch he puts through.
The 25 kilo ProBat roaster that we have here has the ability that you can set the onboard computer, for want of a better word, to follow the recipe for you. So once you've created the profile, you've set your gas parameters in, you can actually tell it to do all the gas changes itself. So when it reaches X degrees Celsius, it'll decrease by 10%. When it reaches another poignant moment, it'll decrease the gases or increase the gases. So you can tell it to follow it and it can do it itself. But what it can't do is it can't be reactive. It can't look at, well, how's this roast going overall, and then react accordingly. So even though we shouldn't be messing about with a profile line and the gas increases and decreases, we shouldn't be messing about with that anyway. But you can see if a roaster's going to go a certain way from the first minute that you introduce them. And also you can see, say, if it's the 13th roast of the day, you can also see how hot has that roaster become during all of this. And then usually at first crack, it can start to have more energy than it did at first crack on your first roast, for example. So it's about being able to be reactive and foreseeing this, and the roaster can't do that, which is a skill in the actual person itself. And that's where the concentration comes in.
I agree. And it's a skill that I don't possess. So, hey ho. Now, kind of leading on from there, I think the biggest challenges you've faced as well is that for the first year and a half, the business was you. I was working.
Yep.
And since then, you've taken on board all the roasting and trained Byron, obviously, but you also play a big role in running our business. How's it been trying to balance the challenge of being in charge of all the roasting and also running the business?
So recently, as in the last, not talking about the COVID year, but since the last, say, 3 or 4 years of the business, that's been the most challenging on me. But starting off, because you didn't know any differently and because you were so young and small, everything was just new. Everything was new. It was exciting. It needed learnt. It needed shared with. So it's just been a learning curve at the beginning, and the difficulty in terms of pressure, workload, and then maintaining the greatness that we are on coffee roasting, the pressures come from that. And then obviously the sheer amount of work that is now as a you know, quite a large business that we are now, as opposed to what we were in the first, say, 2 or 3 years of the business. So I think it's been challenging for everybody personally, you know, yourself and me. But the challenges have been different. You've grown with the business, and the challenges have been different from day one to year 10.
Yeah, 10 years this year. Hopefully when lockdown ends and things go back to normal, we can start talking about a bit of a party in the autumn, perhaps, to celebrate.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Exciting years and also challenging years, you know. And who'd have thought when we started 10 years ago that we'd be faced with the past 12 months that we've been faced with. And you know, you build a business up to be something, and like all business owners across the world at the moment, the challenges are still vast. We have an end in sight in the UK, but still the challenges are vast. What have you taken away from lockdown? What experiences will stick with you? What memories will stick with you?
So what I've taken away is the fact that our customers are really, really loyal. Our wholesale customers are really, really loyal to us. There were big discussions with people at the beginning of lockdown, which showed enormous amount of strength and loyalty from us. And that says a lot to me about, you know, how we move forward with people. It shows that you can diversify. Our retail sales have gone up a huge amount compared to what they were before lockdown. It's a hard one to answer that. I think that one will be easier to answer once we're out of lockdown, because yeah, I think, yeah, because at the moment your head is still in lockdown. And yeah, you can't see the wood through the trees at the moment.
No, it still feels a little bit, the time's still a little bit anxious, even though we know that potentially there's dates. It still feels like there's still a way to go before we can be back to normal circumstances.
I'm really proud about the fact that we're strong. We're sitting here quite strong, you and me sitting here today. The business is in a strong position, and that didn't come by the both of us sitting on our laurels and doing nothing. That comes from the years of looking into stuff, making sure that everything's as it should be, the customer service is as it should be, quality and consistency, and that our name is consistent throughout all of this. So we're very strong. I'm really proud of that, that we're sitting, potentially coming out of lockdown, hopefully cross fingers soon, and we're in an all right position. Yeah.
Thank you. That was really cool. The coffee that was roasted today is going to be on our website. If you want to try it, if you want to try that roast.
Well, barring a tweak.
Barring a tweak. A little bit of a tweak. So here's to the next 10 years, and hopefully maybe we can get back together in 10 years like this and have another chat.
Definitely.
Find time for another chat.
Yeah, I'll be here.